Yay! I'm so excited you all are here. Yay! I know it's exciting. I'll just tell you quickly how this came about, and it wasn't me. I was watching a TED Talk the other day. Don't even know what TED Talk it was. I can't even tell you which one it was. And I heard very clearly a voice in my head say, "You should do a program based on TED Talks." And I said, "Okay." So that's why we're here. As you guys know, anybody who's watched a TED Talk knows they are fabulous. But they're like they can be no more than 18 minutes. They sure look rehearsed. They're always entertaining. I have never seen one that was not entertaining, even on just really obscure subjects. And they go absolutely across the board. You can watch them on science, on technology, on life hacks. I mean, you can just, they're just across the board. And we're going to pick ones that are relevant to what it is we're doing here in Awakening Together. I'm going to ask you guys to help me do that. I know Shauna sent me a suggestion for one. And Shauna, I realized later I had actually seen the one that you sent to me. So, but it's a good one, and we'll play it later in the program. But we'll be doing this every week. And the format will be to sit here and watch the 18-minute TED Talk together, 18 minutes or less. And then talk about what we saw in it. So that's the plan, kind of a free-for-all. Everybody can unmute, I hope. We'll see if we get any feedback on that, but that's the plan. So let me, without further ado, let me play our first TED Talk. Got to figure out how to do it. So let me... I don't know if I pull it up and then pull up, but I'll just quit narrating and you guys wait a minute and we'll see how that works out.
I grew up to study the brain because I have a brother who has been diagnosed with a brain disorder, schizophrenia. And as a sister, and later as a scientist, I wanted to understand, why is it that I can take my dreams, I can connect them to my reality, and I can make my dreams come true? What is it about my brother's brain and his schizophrenia that he cannot connect his dreams to a common and shared reality, so they instead become delusion? So I dedicated my career to research into the severe mental illnesses, and I moved from my home state of Indiana to Boston, where I was working in the lab of Dr. Francine Bennis in the Harvard Department of Psychiatry. And in the lab, we were asking the question, what are the biological differences between the brains of individuals who would be diagnosed as normal control, as compared with the brains of individuals diagnosed with schizophrenia, schizoaffective, or bipolar disorder? So we were essentially mapping the microcircuitry of the brain, which cells are communicating with which cells, with which chemicals, and then in what quantities of those chemicals. So there was a lot of meaning in my life because I was performing this type of research during the day. But then in the evenings and on the weekends, I traveled as an advocate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. But on the morning of December 10, 1996, I woke up to discover that I had a brain disorder of my own. A blood vessel exploded in the left half of my brain. And in the course of 4 hours, I watched my brain completely deteriorate in its ability to process all information. On the morning of the hemorrhage, I could not walk, talk, read, write, or recall any of my life. I essentially became an infant in a woman's body. If you've ever seen a human brain, it's obvious that the two hemispheres are completely separate from one another. And I have brought for you a real human brain. Yes. Thank you. So this is a real human brain. This is the front of the brain, the back of the brain with the spinal cord hanging down. And this is how it would be positioned inside of my head. And when you look at the brain, it's obvious that the two cerebral cortices are completely separate from one another. For those of you who understand computers, our right hemisphere functions like a parallel processor, while our left hemisphere functions like a serial processor. The two hemispheres do communicate with one another through the corpus callosum, which is made up of some 300 million axonal fibers. But other than that, the two hemispheres are completely separate. Because they process information differently, each of our hemispheres think about different things, they care about different things, and dare I say, they have very different personalities. Excuse me. Thank you. It's been a joy. Our right human hemisphere is all about this present moment. It's all about right here, right now. Our right hemisphere, it thinks in pictures, and it learns kinesthetically through the movement of our bodies. Information in the form of energy streams in simultaneously through all of our sensory systems, and then it explodes into this enormous collage of what this present moment looks like, what this present moment smells like and tastes like, what it feels like, and what it sounds like. I am an energy being connected to the energy all around me through the consciousness of my right hemisphere. We are energy beings connected to one another through the consciousness of our right hemispheres as one human family. And right here, right now, we are brothers and sisters on this planet, here to make the world a better place. And in this moment, we are perfect, we are whole, and we are beautiful. My left hemisphere, our left hemisphere, is a very different place. Our left hemisphere thinks linearly and methodically. Our left hemisphere is all about the past, and it's all about the future. Our left hemisphere is designed to take that enormous collage of the present moment and start picking out details, details, and more details about those details. It then categorizes and organizes all that information, associates it with everything in the past we've ever learned, and projects into the future all of our possibilities. And our left hemisphere thinks in language. It's that ongoing brain chatter that connects me and my internal world to my external world. It's that little voice that says to me, hey, you got to remember to pick up bananas on your way home. I need them in the morning. It's that calculating intelligence that knows, that reminds me when I have to do my laundry. But perhaps most important, it's that little voice that says to me, I am. I am. And as soon as my left hemisphere says to me, I am, I become separate. I become a single, solid individual, separate from the energy flow around me and separate from you. And this is the portion of my brain that I lost on the morning of my stroke. On the morning of the stroke, I woke up to a pounding pain behind my left eye. And it was the kind of pain, caustic pain, that you get when you bite into ice cream. And it just gripped me. And then it released me. And then it just gripped me. And then it released me. And it was very unusual for me to ever experience any kind of pain, so I thought, okay, I'll just start my normal routine. So I got up and I jumped onto my CardioGlider, which is a full body, full exercise machine. And I'm jamming away on this thing, and I'm realizing that my hands look like primitive claws grasping onto the bar. And I thought, that's very peculiar. And I looked down at my body, and I thought, whoa, I'm a weird-looking thing. And it was as though my consciousness had shifted away from my normal perception of reality, where I'm the person on the machine having the experience, to some esoteric space where I'm witnessing myself having this experience. And it was all very peculiar, and my headache was just getting worse. So I get off the machine, and I'm walking across my living room floor, and I realize that everything inside of my body has slowed way down. And every step is very rigid and very deliberate. There's no fluidity to my pace, and there's this constriction in my area of perception. So I'm just focused on internal systems. And I'm standing in my bathroom getting ready to step into the shower, and I could actually hear the dialogue inside of my body. I heard a little voice saying, okay, you muscles, you got to contract, and you muscles, you relax. And then I lost my balance, and I'm propped up against the wall.
Oh, okay, guys, can you hear me? Yeah. Okay, and I'm stopping this because, first of all, this is our debut program, trying to figure out how this works. And I couldn't see you guys, so I had to pull you up on my phone. but Don tells me that the video is jumpy. Is that everybody's experience? Yeah, that doesn't make for good viewing experience. So I think what we're probably going to need to do is let Don play the video. Well, and Don suggested I close some things out, but I've got it all set up for the member meeting. So I thought, well, this will be easy.
Oh, okay. Well, here we go.
Okay. 8 minutes. Thank you, Don.
And where I end, because the atoms and the molecules of my arm blended with the atoms and molecules of the wall. And all I could detect was this energy. And I'm asking myself, what is wrong with me? What is going on? And in that moment, my left hemisphere brain chatter went totally silent. Just like someone took a remote control and pushed the mute button. Total silence. And at first I was shocked to find myself inside of a silent mind, but then I was immediately captivated by the magnificence of the energy around me. And because I could no longer identify the boundaries of my body, I felt enormous and expansive. I felt at one with all the energy that was, and it was beautiful there. And then all of a sudden, my left hemisphere comes back online and it says to me, hey, we got a problem. We got to get some help. And I'm going, oh, I got a problem. So it's like, okay, I got a problem. But then I immediately drifted right back out into the consciousness. And I affectionately refer to this space as La La Land. But it was beautiful there. Imagine what it would be like to be totally disconnected from your brain chatter that connects you to the external world. So here I am in this space, and my job and any stress related to my job, it was gone. And I felt lighter in my body. And imagine all of the relationships in the external world and any stressors related to any of those, they were gone. And I felt this sense of peacefulness. And imagine what it would feel like to lose 37 years of emotional baggage. Oh, I felt euphoria. Euphoria. It was beautiful there. And then again, my left hemisphere comes online and it says, hey, you've got to pay attention. We've got to get help. And I'm thinking, I got to get help. I got to focus. So I get out of the shower and I mechanically dress and I'm walking around my apartment and I'm thinking, I got to get to work. Can I drive? And in that moment, my right arm went totally paralyzed by my side. Then I realized, oh my gosh, I'm having a stroke. And then the next thing my brain says to me is, wow. This is so cool. How many brain scientists have the opportunity to study their own brain from the inside out? And then it crosses my mind, but I'm a very busy woman. I don't have time for a stroke. It's like, okay, I can't stop the stroke from happening, so I'll do this for a week or two, and then I'll get back to my routine. Okay, so I got to call help. I got to call work. I could remember the number at work. So I remembered in my office, I had a business card with my number on it. So I go into my business room, and I pull out a 3-inch stack of business cards, and I'm looking at the card on top. And even though I could see clearly in my mind's eye what my business card looked like, I couldn't tell if this was my card or not, because all I could see were pixels. And the pixels of the words blended with the pixels of the background and the pixels of the symbols, and I just couldn't tell. And then I would wait for what I call a wave of clarity. And in that moment, I would be able to reattach to normal reality. reality. And I could tell, that's not the card, that's not the card, that's not the card. It took me 45 minutes to get 1 inch down inside of that stack of cards. In the meantime, for 45 minutes, the hemorrhage is getting bigger in my left hemisphere. I do not understand numbers. I do not understand a telephone, but it's the only plan I have. So I take the phone pad and I put it right here. I take the business card, I put it right here, and I'm matching the shape of the squiggles on the card to the shape of the squiggles on the phone pad. But then I would drift back out into La La Land and not remember if when I come back if I'd already dialed those numbers. So I had to wield my paralyzed arm like a stump and cover the numbers as I went along and push them so that as I would come back to normal reality, I'd be able to tell, yes, I've already dialed that number. Eventually, the whole number gets dialed, and I'm listening to the phone, and my colleague picks up the phone, and he says to me, and I think to myself, oh my gosh, he sounds like a golden retriever. And so I say to him, clear in my mind, I say to him, this is Jill, I need help. And what comes out of my voice is, and I think, oh my gosh, I sound like a golden retriever. So I couldn't know, I didn't know that I couldn't speak or understand language until I tried. So he recognizes that I need help, and he gets me help. And a little while later, I'm riding in an ambulance from one hospital across Boston to Mass General Hospital. And I curl up into a little fetal ball. And just like a balloon with the last bit of air just right out of the balloon, I just felt my energy lift and just, I felt my spirit surrender. And in that moment, I knew that I was no longer the choreographer of my life. And either the doctors rescue my body and give me a second chance at life, or this was perhaps my moment of transition. When I woke later that afternoon, I was shocked to discover that I was still alive. When I felt my spirit surrender, I said goodbye to my life, and my mind was now suspended between two very opposite planes of reality. Stimulation coming in through my sensory systems felt like pure pain. Light burned my brain like wildfire, and sounds were so loud and chaotic that I could not pick a voice out from the background noise, and I just wanted to escape because I could not identify the position of my body in space. I felt enormous and expansive, like a genie just liberated from her bottle. And my spirit soared free like a great whale gliding through a sea of silent euphoria. Nirvana. I found nirvana. And I remember thinking, there's no way I would ever be able to squeeze the enormousness of myself back inside this tiny little body. But then I realized, but I'm still alive. I'm still alive, and I have found nirvana. And if I have found nirvana, and I'm still alive, then everyone who is alive can find nirvana. And I pictured a world filled with beautiful, peaceful, compassionate, loving people who knew that they could come to this space at any time, and that they could purposely choose to step to the right of their left hemispheres and find this peace. And then I realized what a tremendous gift this experience could be. What a stroke of insight this could be to how we live our lives. And it motivated me to recover. 2.5 weeks after the hemorrhage, the surgeons went in and they removed a blood clot the size of a golf ball that was pushing on my language centers. Here I am with my mama, who's a true angel in my life. It took me 8 years to completely recover. So, who are we? We are the life force power of the universe. with manual dexterity and two cognitive minds. And we have the power to choose moment by moment who and how we want to be in the world. Right here, right now, I can step into the consciousness of my right hemisphere where we are. I am the life force power of the universe. I am the life force power of the 50 trillion beautiful molecular geniuses that make up my form, at one with all that is. Or I can choose to step into the consciousness of my left hemisphere, where I become a single individual, a solid, separate from the flow, separate from you. I am Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, intellectual, neuroanatomist. These are the we inside of me. Which would you choose? Which do you choose? And when? I believe that the more time we spend choosing to run the deep inner peace circuitry of our right hemispheres, the more peace we will project into the world, and the more peaceful our planet will be. And I thought that was an idea worth spreading. Thank you.
Thank you, Dawn, for playing that. Yeah, we'll work on the delivery. And it did sync up a whole lot better there at the end. It quit being so jumpy. So thank you all for your patience with that. At this point, I am going to open this thing up for discussion. It was an amazing talk. That's all I'll say before I let the rest of you speak your minds about it. Does anybody have anything they want to share? Yeah, Dawn.
One thing that she kept saying that I've also found sometimes to be true, I even had a conversation when Regina picked me up from the airport about this, and it's something that Regina had to deal with herself. In the video, Jill Bolte talks about what she lovingly and daringly calls La La Land. I don't know about anyone else, but that seems extremely derogatory, and that's not really, as far as I know, like somewhere you'd really want to be or stay in. La La Land seems like you're disconnected, you're out of it, you're not in touch. One of the things that on my conversation with Regina that I admitted to her, which was a fear of mine, and I'm still trying to come to terms with it, although it really helped that Regina shared her opinion, was about this bliss in anything. Because when I'm by myself and I'm meditating, oh boy, I can get so blissed out or blissed in, whichever way you out in, it's all, there is no out and in. But when it comes to being around others and I'm immersed in this bliss, which, to be honest with you, in this format, I have never let myself get like that. I will on purpose do something to prevent myself from getting too blissed out, especially while working, because I notice certain functions seem to fall away, like being able to push play or make an announcement at the right time at the right space. Remember to push record. I think one time I got so blissed out during Karen Wirth's meditation that I forgot to push play on a Sunday gathering. So for me, when she called it La La Land, I can see how it almost makes this not something you'd want to go for. It almost creates some kind of scare, like, ooh, don't go there. So yeah, I don't know what to do with that besides, you know, trust.
Yeah,
Regina had said that was one of the fears that she had come up for her, was that she may become some bliss ninny. So.
Well, and let me it's interesting, Dawn, that you should talk about that aspect. It occurred to me when I watched this again a little bit earlier today that was exactly the experience that I had several years ago when, you know, I've talked about that experience, you know, oh, it's one, boom, 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 and it just kept getting exponentially larger, my understanding. It just kept including more and more and more. But I had to go, okay, now how do I make my legs work? I mean, I had to try and make myself get, okay, getting out of the pool. Oh, that's right. You lift this and then you do this and then, you know, didn't like make your way. And so I absolutely had that experience. So I can really relate to what she said. But you'll also note that Eckhart Tolle talks about having to take like 2 years after his initial awakening to reintegrate himself into how the world works. You know, I think you've read that Byron Katie book where she talks about exactly the same thing. She couldn't even say you and me, you know. She walked in anybody's house because she couldn't get the concept of private property. So, and I tell you what, if you asked me, I want to go right back there today and not know how to move my legs, I'd say, yes, ma'am. So at least for me, having had a little taste of that, it doesn't seem as, scary, I guess. And I think you would adapt. I think you would adapt. It's just a different way of experiencing it. And I want to say one more thing, and then I'm going to quit talking. And that is that you remember when Regina had us do that exercise. You might remember when Regina had us do that exercise a few weeks ago where we all got really, you know, dropped into our hearts and then tried to speak for a minute. And most of us found it very difficult to do. And I think it's this, yes, it felt very awkward. And I think that this is the same phenomenon. But, you know, I think it's probably only ego that says, well, you're not even going to be able to feed yourself. You'll have to wear diapers. I mean, you know, that wants to just give the worst case scenario, right? So I don't think it's really worth being scared about. And Sharon, I see you are unmuted. Are you going to tell us something?
Yeah, well, when I first got into the course, I was laughing so hard. I couldn't stop laughing for days. I would get on to gather and just laugh. And just now, I've been laughing out loud because I'm reading a book, No Self, No Problem, He's a neuropsychologist, so he studies the brain, and he's saying exactly this is what's happening, that we're just these images in the brain, and it's right and left, and the interpreter is the left. So, I mean, like, I said to my son, I said, you're not even John. Like, it made me, you know, when you get that laughter, you get, at that moment, you know that this isn't true, that I'm really not, you know, because it's funny how the interpreter doesn't want to let go, but you don't know if you know what I'm saying? And because I'm a visual person, I taught art for so many years, I can visibly see how this must look. Even though it could be ego asking that, it really doesn't matter, because I think that the picture of it is important, because it's getting our left. It's somewhat like what Roger Castello shares. Have you ever watched him, Jacqueline? Roger?
Yeah.
So it's the working mind and the thinking mind. So the working mind does get, you know, that's where the Inner Ramana teaches us that it's a hammer. It's our tool. It wasn't meant to be our life. But it somehow interpreted every one of us with a really hard script. You know, and what I found funny is how serious I take this. You know, it's you know, like I don't know. I years ago I saw Batman when Joker. You know how Regina say the spirit talks to you, or it's the ego. You know, here. So I heard the Joker say, "Why so serious, Batman?" And I thought that was something for me to really, because like I have always been like a funny kind of person, but I also, when I get anxiety or when things happen, I'm like, it's all me, you know, I'm doing this all of myself. And it just brought some more clarity, you know, and I don't really know that, you know, I know that we have the willingness to do it, but who is the we that has the willingness? It's just the oneness, you know, it's kind of like a beautiful thing that we're even in this room. You know, to even know what we know, it's, you know, whether we completely go into whatever happens is going to happen anyway. But I love that you're having this on Sundays. I'm so excited about it.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing that, Sharon. And thank you for being here. Really, we appreciate your insights. Who else wants to share? Yeah, George, please.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen that clip before, but it's been quite a while, so it was fabulous to listen to it again in this context. You know, and she mentioned her brother was a schizophrenic.
Yeah.
My wife's sister is a paranoid schizophrenic since she was about 18 years old. And I'm always on guard when I'm around her because when she hears you say something, her perception of what you say and what you mean is different. And she has over the years threatened to kill Liz more than once, you know, because she's very bright, very intelligent. As a matter of fact, she's been in a PhD program, in a doctorate program for several years. Of course, writing about mental illness. And she self-monitors herself. So she knows when she needs to check herself into the hospital and that sort of thing. But, she is potentially dangerous. But then again, we all are.
Yeah.
I've always been a little bit on guard around her. When you've got a family member that's, it just gives you a heightened awareness of mental illness, or what we consider to be mental illness. So as far as Don's comment on blissed out, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, I mean, you know, we just read NTI at the very last chapter of Revelation here. We're going through this class. And, one of the tricks of the ego is being satisfied, self-satisfaction. And so if we're in that state of bliss and we think that's it, that ain't it, okay? But as long as you realize that that's not it, there's nothing wrong with having that experience, in my opinion. Of course, you know, who am I? I'm not awakened, so. But anyway, yeah, that was a great clip, and it was amazing that, you know, even though she had this experience over, it seems like an hour or two or whatever, she really wasn't aware enough to call immediately. You know, they always say if you're having a stroke, time is of the essence.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same thing, George. I'm like, dial 911.
But you know what? If you don't know what 911 is,
right?
All right, I'm done.
Yeah, thank you, George. Yeah, and I really appreciate your comments about the mental illness thing, because it has always struck me that mental illness is just on one end of the spectrum, you know, and we're all located on this spectrum somewhere. And you're like, you got to be really careful because, you know, she may misinterpret what you say. Well, isn't that true for everybody you talk to? She just may be a little bit more extreme with that. So, really, I just think that's true, that we're all on that. We're all on the spectrum, baby. Shauna.
So I've seen that clip before too, like George said, but in this context and with what we've learned through, you know, Awakening Together, it's just so much more striking. It really struck in my heart the dynamic of what we go through in our practice, right? Listen to the ego, listen to truth. She did that dramatically back and forth to show us what truth is and the way she explained truth. And with her passion for it, it was like she was right there in the truth. She could express to us what it felt like for her. That just opened my heart. Oh, my God. And then the logic comes back and says, we've got to do something. We got to do something. We're in trouble here. That's exactly what my ego does.
And then she's off here again. I mean, it was great, wasn't it?
Exactly. And I can do that exact same thing a dozen times in a day. So I just think she just expresses it so lovely. And that point where she said, she in her mind, she made the decision to come back and share that with us. I mean, that's just huge for me, to make a decision to leave that and come back and share it with us so that we can learn that this ego is not what we're supposed to be listening to. I just love that. That's my sharing. Thank you for the program. It's wonderful.
Oh, good. Thank you, Shauna. And if we have time, there's a little follow-up clip that I'll play, but I want to see also that addresses some of the stuff that you just mentioned and that has been mentioned. So who else would like to share? Yeah, Doreen. Thank you for joining us, Doreen. It's good to see you.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'm on my iPad. Usually I'm on my laptop. So first of all, thank you for doing this. I love TED Talks. So this is great. So what struck me about her talk were the questions. Which one would you choose? Which one do you choose? And when? I just felt that in my heart when she posed, and you could tell it was felt in the audience as well. And I think, you know, just thinking about those questions, and I know I'm going to look at it again because I'm very curious. And I think Shauna kind of alluded to it, of how did she reconcile the left side and the right side together? Because if she's going off on the right side, it's total bliss. She's happy, right? And why worry about the other side, right? You know, not the left side, why even worry? But something brought her back, and somehow she was able to reconcile the two, because that's what we have to do in order to still be in this space, in this realm right now. Somehow we have to reconcile. And it also made me think of Maladoma Somme, who is a shaman, an African shaman. He wrote this incredible book called Of Water and Spirit. But he also, there's an article that he wrote that has been floating around, because in his culture, they treat people with mental illness completely differently than we do in the Western culture. They treat them as if they have a gift, and they want to sit with them and know what they know, because they realize that they have some wisdom that maybe they themselves don't have access to. And so I think part of that for us is that when we go to this la-la land or this bliss state, that we will be judged, as opposed to having this incredible amount of wisdom. So anyway, thank you. Those are the things that came up for me, just more contemplation, more to reflect on, which is, I guess, what this is about. So thanks.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you, Doreen. I appreciate you pointing out the question again. I think it's very helpful. I also know, and I think she says this in her clip, that the kind of work she's doing now is helping people find that balance that you were addressing. I just want to see if there were... let me tell you all what I found really, really cool about this was, one of the things I found really cool about it was, it was like, of course, I mean, if consciousness were going to make a bunch of, well, I don't know what the plural of apparatus is, apparati, to have this experience, of course it would, you know, and Course in Miracles talks about, you know, you have a split mind. She showed us the brain. It's literally a split mind. Left hemisphere, you know, past, future, integrating, you know, naming the details of the details, and right hemisphere, just loving everything and having a great experience, right? I mean, and yes, this is what our experience is, but how cool is it that consciousness would build machines that would have those two functionalities, right? I mean, it's just, you know, it's not happenstance. It's not chance. Yeah. George says left-handed people are said to be in the right mind. Well, that leaves me out. Oh, okay, George, you're in your right mind. Kathy's in her right mind. See? That's great. Let me see if there's anything else that, and I also love the, she said she thought there's no way I would be able to squeeze the enormousness of myself back into my body. And it's just, just that expansiveness, just, you could just almost feel that viscerally what she was talking about. So I really, really loved that quote. Yeah, so I think that's all that I wanted to share, but I did want to share that. Who else would like to share from the video? And well, I can tell you for next time, I am going to work on. I had actually downloaded them, and have them playing from my machine, so I wouldn't have YouTube open at the same time. But I'm gonna work on it. I'm going to work on it and make that better. But I am going to play you another video as a follow-up. It's like a follow-up talk with her from TED Talk. So hopefully this won't be too jumpy. And yeah, I'll just play it. Dawn, thank you for offering. I'll just play it from my computer and we'll see what happens. If I can find it again. Okay. Share the screen first. But I've also got to figure out how to just share a portion, and because I couldn't see y'all. So hopefully somebody will call me or something if it goes wrong.
Okay. So this is a real human brain. This is the front of the brain, the back of the brain with the spinal cord hanging down. And this is how it would be positioned inside of my head. And when you look at the brain, it's obvious that the two cerebral cortices are completely separate from one another. For those of you who understand computers, our right hemisphere functions like a parallel processor, while our left hemisphere functions like a serial processor. The two hemispheres do communicate with one another through the corpus callosum, which is made up of some 300 million axonal fibers. But other than that, the two hemispheres are completely separate.
So, as everybody here knows, this was really a watershed moment for TED and for Jill Bolte Taylor. That was one of the earliest TED videos to go viral, mega viral. Almost 15 million people have seen that TED Talk today. It's my great honor and pleasure to welcome Jill Bolte Taylor back to the stage.
Everybody. Nice to be here again with Ted. Yes, I'm sorry.
No, it's. I think everybody's waiting yeah. with bated breath to hear yeah. you. That talk was, of course, about your personal story, surviving a stroke. Yeah. At the time, you were a neuroscientist, and you became your own research subject. Yeah. What happened after that talk? What happened to your life?
Within the first 3 months of delivering that TED Talk, it was posted and it went totally viral. And within 3 months, I was chosen as one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world. Nice little girl from Indiana. What do you do with that? I was interviewed by Oprah as the premier guest on her new Soul series. And then Penguin Books purchased the rights to my Stroke of Insight. And it proceeded to go immediately to the New York Times bestseller list. That was the first 3 months. So Ted, you know, Ted and I went viral together, and it's been a lovely experience. Yeah, changed my life entirely.
We got some questions from TEDxers around the world. I've got two of them here. One from Peggy Stefan from TEDx Excelsior. Or Peggy Stefan, she asks, how has your experience in suffering a stroke changed your research? You are, of course, a trained neuroscientist. How has it changed that?
Well, more important than that, when the stroke happened and I shifted completely into the right brain and I had no left brain, that meant I was no longer going to be in the lab because I no longer had a left brain and I lost all of my science knowledge. I had to go back and relearn that. And what I learned along the way through the process of growing up more right-brained is I'm much friendlier now than I used to be. So although I love cells and I think that neurons are the most beautiful thing in the world underneath the microscope, me being in a lab is no longer the best place for me. So I have completely shifted my teaching in the medical school into now I'm teaching on a more global level. So everything has completely shifted for me.
You lecture, you work with kids. Tell us what you're doing now.
Well, I keynote all over the world. I keynote for medical organizations, any professional organization, corporations. It's like anybody who has a brain would like to have a better idea of how to get your brain to do what you want it to do. We do have two very different ways of perceiving the world, one more open and expansive and one more detail-based and on a schedule. And really, for me, everything has shifted away from being the scientist in the lab to being able to come in and help people understand we do have the power to pick and choose who and how we want to be in the world. And every ability we have because we have cells that perform that function. So I try to help people recognize when are you already in your right brain experience, when are you in your left brain experience, and how can we create more of that middle path? How do we really find that balance between the two? So it's, you know, I think our first job as human beings in the world is to love one another. I think that is our primary compassionate way of being. It is the essence of our right brain. And when we come into the world through that compassion and that love and that openness, then all the details we can play together. We can approach one another with curiosity and compassion.
I guess that's a bit of a window into where you're headed next.
Where am I headed next? Really, yeah. Really into the children. I started a not-for-profit, of course, Jill Bolte Taylor Brains. And I care about educating the public about the resiliency and the beauty of the human brain. I care about the children. My not-for-profit is working with Goldie Hawn and the Hawn Foundation. They have a beautiful program called the Mind Up Program, which is actually teaching children about the amygdala, about the hippocampus, about the different regions of the brain, and helping children have some emotional accountability. And with emotional accountability comes a level of higher cognitive accountability. So I'm doing that. And then there's a movie on the horizon. And if and when that ever happens, it will take you on that journey into who you are as a whole, into who you are as a right brain. It will take you there and it will let you make your own decision. Would I come back and what would I be like if I were a little bit more right-brained in the world?
Wow. Before you go, any last thoughts?
You know, I'm really grateful to this organization. TED changed my life in 2008. When that TED Talk happened, I was allowed to be vulnerable. I opened my heart. I went out on the limb in that presentation. And this organization, you held me in that beautiful space of safety. And together, we made what that TED Talk became. And I will always be eternally grateful because my life has changed. It's given me the opportunity to really be who I am in the world. So sure. I'm thankful.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. Yeah. I thought it was so interesting how she could not, she still loved all that science stuff, but that's not what she was drawn to anymore. Yeah. She was just drawn to work with people. Yeah. I see it really touched Shauna too. It's sweet, 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 sweet. We'll work on the technology for the program. We will be back here next week, same time, which is 6 p.m. Eastern time. And in the meantime, if you watch a TED Talk you want us to play for this program, we'd love to hear from you in that regard. You can send it to me at jacqueline.awakeningtogether@yahoo.com, or, you know, if you got another email address for me, that works too. So that'd be great. And I want to say one more thing about TED Talks. The cool thing about TED Talks is you can turn a TED Talk on YouTube and have autoplay on and just listen to TED Talks all day long while you're cleaning the house, and you will hear several that you enjoy. So I invite you to do that as well. Of course, they have their own website. I think it's just TED.com, but you know, you could Google it and find it. But they are doing a service to the world. Thank you all very, very much for being here. I love you dearly, and I'll see you in about an hour at the member meeting.